Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Pod Yourself a Gun,
a Sopranos podcast where Vince and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. Yeah, we're very excited about today's episode for multiple reasons. Number one, it's a good episode. But number two, it's our guest that we're excited about, because our guest today is none other than Brendan from the Fratcast, the Human Giant. What's up, dude?
Suck these jeans.
Hell yeah, dude. How's life?
It's beautiful, man. It's beautiful.
It's just beautiful. You're having a beautiful life.
It is, yeah.
Anyways, I'm very excited to have you on, because you are you are the co-founder of the original Fratcast, one of the original surviving members, and I love you very much. I miss seeing you.
I love you too. I love all you guys. I was actually, before we got started, I was talking about my daughter's obsessed with all things unicorn. And so I played Space Unicorn for her, and she absolutely loved it. She demands to hear it all the time. And so it's a nice little memory of Ben every time we hear that, because Ben loved that song too. So yeah,
I mean, it's a great
kind of trip down memory lane.
Yeah. And it's a legit banger.
It stands on its own four hoofs. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
But it's got the extra bit of nostalgia. So yeah. it's always a nice reminder of you guys and the bond we share as frauders.
Now I'm just thinking about you crying listening to Space Unicorn.
You're not far off, man. Parenthood does weird things to you.
Yeah. That's what I've heard. I wouldn't know, but I have a cat.
I definitely burst into an ugly cry listening to Holland 1945 by Neutral Milk Hotel a few months ago. So I'm doing great. I'm doing great.
No, that's a cry song, though. I get that. You know, that's a song that's meant for crying. Whereas Space Unicorn, that's meant for celebrating space.
That's right. True. Yeah. And the president of space, Kevin Spacey.
That's right.
Kevin Spacey,
who, president of...
who I have not been following since I made that joke 4.5 years ago. I hope he's doing okay and not into weird shit or anything.
No, he's fine. He's good.
Everything's super normal with him. Has been.
Yeah, perhaps as tangential relationships to global cabals of sex traffickers.
No. He wouldn't have
anything. That's just a weird example I made up.
Yeah. It's just something random.
He's probably somewhere having a normal one.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely being normal is his thing. You've seen all of The Sopranos, but it's been a while since you rewatched it, right?
Yeah, so I watched, I think I didn't watch it from the beginning, but I definitely had gotten caught up, you know, by the end. I think I had gotten caught up on it prior to the penultimate season.
Yeah.
I've seen every episode, though I do believe the last Sopranos episode I watched was the finale, at the time of the finale. So it was fun to go back and rewatch. I think, you know, somewhere in my head, I had it as like, in my memory, I had it as like a dramatic show that was doing a lot of different interesting things that also just kind of happened to be funny. And when I rewatched this episode, I was like, this is a comedy. This show is a comedy.
Yeah.
I think at the time it was so different. And obviously there's been a lot of ink spilled about, you know, it sort of heralded the beginning of prestige TV and all that kind of stuff. Which is all true, right? But I think it got sort of caught up in that through no fault of its own. Is like, oh, it's saying so much other stuff, and it's about all these other
things.
Think about
the psychoanalysis.
Yeah, and Oh, and by the way, like those parts are the least tolerable.
Yes, exactly. 100%.
Yeah.
And it's really just this amazing, you know, I feel like The Wire, which I love The Wire as well, don't get me wrong, but The Wire gets so much credit as like Dickensian, whereas Sopranos is every bit, if not more, mm-hmm. you know, so compelling with all those characters. And yeah, all of Melfi's, it made me also remember like all of Melfi's subplots and how those all kind of fell flat. And then of course the psychoanalysis scenes are like barely tolerable, but man, everything else, every character, everybody, the casting just mm-hmm. impeccable. Everyone they got was so perfect all the way down to, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but the crazy college roommate. I mean, what yeah. a, mm-hmm. what a perfect, what a well-written plot line and what a perfect yes. casting choice for that woman.
They're weirdly good at writing people in their adolescence. It's strange. It's yeah. like they have AJ down perfectly as a little nu metal kid, and they mm-hmm. have Meadow down as kind of like this like NPR lib who's you know, at a private school in New York.
Yeah.
Columbia so attendee.
Before yeah. all right, hey. Before we get into all that, I mean, how do we start every episode, Matt?
That's right. Before we get into it, we have to start. It is the law to start with the Pod Yourself a Gun theme song.
You guys should just play it first. Pod.
Your mama always said you'd be the chosen. Pod. Pod. Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. What do you mean we should play it first? We need to play it to watch the reaction of the guests that we have on. And I got to say,
Matt needs the validation every time.
Well, I've heard it before. Yeah. I laughed very hard the first time I heard it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because it doesn't stay funny.
the cat's out of the bag on this one.
Yeah,
sure is. So today we are talking about season 3, episode 6 of The Sopranos, University, which premiered on April 1st, 2001. That is April Fool's Day. Vince, what was going on in America?
Well, when HBO's this episode
came out? Excuse me. I would just like to add that the only fool that I can think of is the person that missed this episode.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. That's a pull quote.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to use the Remember When machine, you know, to give you the cultural context around when this episode premiered. You cannot separate art from its cultural context. And that's why that's right. we provide you with the cultural context in the Remember When machine. Walk, walk. Teddy, daddy, bop, bop, shoo, bop. Remember then,
Remember when is the lowest form of conversation.
Hell yeah.
That's right. So April 1st, 2001, some of the things that happened that day, the former president of Serbia, Slobodan Milosevic, surrendered to special forces to be tried for war crimes.
Fun.
Yeah. So there was that. That That's happened.
A pretty big one.
Yeah.
So who was it? It was the Serbs versus who?
Well, the Serbs, the Yugoslavia was made up of Slovenia, Serbia, Bosnia, Montenegro, and Croatia. And when the Soviet Union broke up, a lot of the other republics of Yugoslavia broke away from it, like Croatia.
Right.
And Serbia controlled like the military mostly, and was sort of they were in most of the positions of power in Yugoslavia, and so they were kind of like, no, you're part of us, you can't go away. So
what's Kosovo then?
Kosovo is another republic in the former Yugoslavia.
It's just a mess.
Kind of a mishmash. There's like Muslims, there's Serbs, there's you know, Bosnians.
There's a lot of Slavs. I know there's lots of Slavs.
Well, they're all Slavs, but they're different kinds of. They're different flavors of Slavs.
They're sub Slavs.
Yeah, exactly.
They are sub Slavs. Well, that's fun. Uh-huh. What else was happening?
Other things that were happening. The Netherlands actually became the first country in the world to legalize same-sex marriage.
And that makes sense. That's where you go if you want to like eat mushrooms and shit, right?
Yeah, and marry a
or
man,
get married to a guy.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense. They're ahead of the curve on all this stuff.
Yeah, they were microdosing and macrodosing and getting gay married. Also, Stone Cold defeated The Rock for the WWF Championship at WrestleMania 17 in the Houston Astrodome.
Fuck.
Yeah.
So crazy day, dude.
Yeah. Very important. The top movies in the country at the time were Spy Kids by Robert Rodriguez, which I don't know if you've ever seen, but it feels like you're tripping balls to watch because it looks like he shot the entire thing like on a green screen in his house.
Right.
I think he did, didn't he? I mean, isn't the entire movie green screen?
Yeah, basically. Like, I think he used it to teach himself how to do special effects or something. And
Ugh. So yeah, did he bring like, the kids?
It's like the Tim and Eric sketch Spaghetti, where he's got like his hair is like green screen. It's wrapped in the green screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or he gets the green screen hair implants. Affecting his brain.
I can't stand that one sketch. That's one sketch I can't. I can't watch a guy with a mouthful of spaghetti say spaghetti.
Yeah, there's a lot of food stuff in Tim and Eric. Like, I couldn't handle it whenever they did gross food stuff.
Gross food stuff kills me. I don't like it.
I don't either. The second movie was Someone Like You, starring Ashley Judd and Hugh Jackman.
Sick.
The old Judd-Jackman classic pairing. And the
classic
third
pair
was Heartbreakers, which we talked about last week. You know, Jennifer Love Hewitt, Sigourney Weaver, Gene Hackman.
Mm-hmm.
The top songs.
Oh, yeah.
Back at
Sorry, no, I just remembered it. I don't even think I saw it, but I was having trouble remembering what it was. Sorry, I just my realization happened out loud.
Oh, no, I had to look it up. So that's impressive that you pulled it out of your own brain.
I loved it when I saw it. And then they sang Back in the USSR. I was like, oh, that's fun. And then also at one point, they put glass on their salad and get it for free. And I'm like, well, that seems strange because you haven't finished the salad. So
also you could just like use a human hair. That feels like it'd be safer.
Yeah. But also it's just like pour it. Maybe when you're done with the salad, I don't know. It seems weird to order a whole salad, eat like two bites and then put glass in it and get it for free. It seemed like a bad con. It's a bad con.
Yeah. The top songs, back at number one with a bullet is Butterfly by Crazy Town.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Which is not just a great song, but just like a beautiful phrase. Like, I feel like if you'd never heard the song Butterfly by Crazy Town, the phrase Butterfly by Crazy Town, it paints an evocative portrait.
Yeah, a horny one. There's something about both those words, like Crazy Town, Butterfly by Crazy Town, just makes me horny. And I think that might be Pavlovian. Like, maybe I knew that song.
Yeah, no, it's about him making her leg shake. She goes crazy.
I mean, it's a whole song about a lady with a back tattoo, right? She got a lower back tattoo. That was
I never.
Back when that was provocative.
I never broke that down, but yeah, now that you say that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's just like, look at this whore.
That's how they knew she was Crazy Town.
Man, yeah, it's like Bullseye.
Yeah.
The guy I don't remember who it was. Somebody who lived under in the apartment underneath me in college listened to that song on repeat.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. There's like something weird about it where it's like it was such a catchy song. But I'm positive that men were masturbating to it.
Yeah. And I'm talking for like hours. Like not like five times in a row, like hours. And I mean, you could totally tell because that bass line, right? The Flea sample.
Mm.
I mean, it's not like it's, you know, it's distinctive. So you know what it is.
You know Butterfly when it's happening.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yes.
I enjoy the derivativeness of the fact that Crazy Town sampled a bass line that probably came out, I don't know, 5 years earlier. And then apparently now in the UK, there's another song that samples Crazy Town sampling the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And
that's crazy,
it's
dude.
It's fun. It's a little Russian nesting doll.
It's like Multiplicity. You know, the songs just get worse and worse.
Yeah. Anyway, that was the Remember When machine.
Great machine that we have. Very important cultural context. All right. So let's get into this episode. Vince, what is the synopsis for this episode based on HBO Max?
Ralph's volatile relationship with a Bada Bing stripper and his obsession with the movie Gladiator combined to put a damper on several boys' night out sessions at the club. Meanwhile, at Columbia, Meadow's relationship with Noah is put to the test by her needy roommate, Caitlin.
Okay. Yeah, that's about right. Pretty good. I have my own Bada B stories.
Okay.
That I think break down the episode in a, you know, in a much more thoughtful way.
Oh, sure, sure.
So these are the Bada B stories, is what was going on in this episode. Oh, God. Mm. Tracy gets braces and punched in the faces. Caitlin tempts Faitlin, gets berated by roommatelin. Noah is a grower, not a shower. Ralphie gets mouthy and character goes southy. And Tony on throny watches chaos happen baloney. All right.
You might have to break down the Noah is a grower, not a shower one. I don't even think I get that.
I think that's just about his dick. We know that dick, you know, it doesn't make a physical appearance in the episode, but we know that, you know, I mean, what I mean by that, like poetically, is that like Noah seems like such a kind of meek, you know, sweet beta male type dude. Mm-hmm. But he's about getting that pussy. And and I think in this episode, you kind of see him, you see how those kind of beta male type boys are very much so just it's an act that they're putting on. Like he's a
proto fuck boy. Well, I was thinking that. I had that in my notes.
I don't know if I read this the same way as you. To me, he just read as like the perfect limousine lib, where he went from being like the caring guy who thinks oh, maybe we should be patient with her, and then his girlfriend says he's a nice guy, to like, my dad got a restraining order against her, without the slightest bit of introspection there. It was like, as soon as he was actually forced to deal with the problem himself, he went full Dennis Miller.
Yeah, no, I mean, I see what you mean, and that is, I think, how I initially read the character when
I think those can coexist.
Sure.
Those are diametrically opposed viewpoints on the...
No, that's true.
Yeah, I think just like on the surface, that's how I first read the character. But upon rewatching it, you really see the tactics of a fuckboy, the manipulation, like the way that he is. You know, he kind of goes positive whenever Meadow goes negative. You know, he wants to always like present himself as caring and kind and whatnot, just to, you know, just to make that pussy juicy. And I feel like, you know, he succeeds in that in multiple ways, but we'll get into that. Do you want to start with
turn that meadow into a swamp?
You want to start with this storyline?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so Meadow and Noah are taking their relationship to the next level.
Meanwhile, you know, Meadow's still dealing with Caitlin, who's a total pain in the ass. And I think, so like, my thoughts on this episode are like, this is one of the episodes that stands out in my mind as one of the ones I remember the best, even though I haven't seen it in like 20 years. And in my head, like this was like a 5-episode arc, but it's all packed into one episode.
Yes.
And like this character, or this storyline in particular, I feel like it really illustrates how good the writing of The Sopranos is, because like on the one hand, you have Noah, who's like the perfect, you know, believable, entitled college kid that you've probably met a version of. And mm-hmm. then on the other, you have Caitlin, who's like kind of the worst case scenario roommate, but still completely believable.
And, so 100% believable. Yeah. In fact, I've had roommates who have pulled...
I was going to say, we all knew someone like that in college.
Yes, who pulled similar shit. Like shit like... you know, you come home late and they're mad at you and they're like, you didn't call. And, you know, people
you don't even call.
Yeah.
Who doesn't call? What kind of people are these?
You could have been been dead in the street with your throat cut. Like anyone who treats their roommate like a mother would treat a son or daughter is like, they have some serious issues, but I've met them. You know, I've had a roommate like that, and I've known other people who've had, and also have known people who had mental breakdowns in their first year in college, you know?
Yeah.
Either because they you know, had a mental illness that came out then, or just because they could not handle being on their own.
I mean, the first 2 weeks of college, like in your head, at least, I don't know, for me, like pop culture had me convinced that I was going to like a giant fucking like Girls Gone Wild party.
Oh yeah, it was supposed to be Fuck City.
It was supposed to be like the best time ever.
And it
ever.
Ended up being like fucking Cry Town, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And you know, I think college eventually gets super fun and amazing, but like the first 2 weeks or so are not fun at all. Everybody's like still weird and, you know, trying to hold on to their
There's
Mommies
a lot of forced fun.
Yeah.
There's forced fun. There's like events that are put on by the school, you know, and you go to them thinking like, oh, this is going to be where the fuck festival happens. And it just doesn't. And you just find yourself randomly, like in the first week, I think, of college, I found myself like drunk and crying because I was already in love with someone who broke my heart, like in 7 days.
Yeah.
So it's like you know, it can be a weird transition.
I think I had never encountered like rich kids, like rich smart kids in a big group before. So like I went from, I spent 4 years like learning how to relate to AJs. And then in like a week I had to be surrounded by Noahs, and it was very fucking confusing for me. And it was hard to,
Yeah. It is weird being an AJ kind of guy in a Noah kind of town.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wasn't an AJ kind of guy, but that's kind of what like I was surrounded with and learned how to, navigate around. And then when you're around a bunch of like pretentious name droppers, all of a sudden you're like, wow, this is a whole different thing.
Yeah. 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 Very weird. And,
Vince spent 4 years learning all the words to every Slipknot song.
Yeah. Oh. I went from having to like,
really tough.
I had to,
you're
I had
like,
to like wrestle
for nothing.
I had to wrestle pregnant pit bulls, you know, outside of the Circle K. And then all of a sudden I'm surrounded by people that I'd never met before. Like I'd never actually encountered a lot of the types of people that I met at college, because we didn't have them in the Central Valley. It was like an entirely new species.
Yeah. 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 You mean Jews?
Yeah, Jews. Well, Jews was part of it, but mostly just like, you know, smart kids with money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, Jews. No, I'm kidding. Because I had the opposite experience, but I had the first ever experience of people who had never met a Jew, but yet still were experts at doing Jew jokes. And I remember at first being like, oh, hell yeah, I can relate. You know, I know all these jokes too. And then being like, wait a minute. You can't do these jokes if you've never met. Am I the first Jew you've ever said them to? I feel like this is bad, but I don't know why. And it was strange meeting, you know, I met all of the Vinces from all over.
Sure.
And had to explain to them that, you know, maybe cool it on the Jew jokes.
Yeah. Because my dad was a junior college teacher, we knew one Jewish family who was the math teacher at the junior college. And that was more like
junior college.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Got it.
There was an episode of The Sopranos called College, and this one's called University. And I wish there was like an in-between episode called Junior College, which dealt with just some other themes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just
it would have been AJ focused.
Yes, yes. Yeah. It would have been AJ gets someone pregnant, but she's faking it.
I feel like they robbed us of that episode.
It's unfortunate. In terms of like, you know, alternate titles for this episode, because of the fact that the theme of university is kind of throughout, it's like you see Caitlin's experience, at Columbia, kind of mirrors like another parallel Caitlin through the role of Tracy, a stripper at the Bing, who is going through her own university, being a stripper at the Bing.
Yeah, Tracy is just junior college Caitlin.
Exactly. And so in terms of alternate titles, I have two. I have the School of Hard Knockers and School of Hard Cocks. I couldn't choose, so I said
sure,
both.
Sure. My alternate title was just Are You Not Entertained?
Yeah, that's good too, because there's a lot of fucking gladiator references.
Yeah, there's gladiator references. I had this idea when I was watching this episode. I don't want to jump storylines, but I'm going to say the same
thing. Do it.
I have an idea for a coffee table book that is just like people who played like strippers or one-off naked people in The Sopranos. Just a coffee table book of like them at the time, like what happened in their lives since then and like what they're doing now.
Yeah.
But you have to have been naked in The Sopranos.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's because there's always like 10 uncredited strippers in like every Sopranos episode, especially this one. And I just want to know like who those people are, you know, how they got recruited into the Bada Bing and like what they're doing now. Like the girl who played Tracy and I think the guy who played Noah both ended up starting yoga practices, which I find interesting.
That makes sense.
They both look like yoga teachers. Sure.
They do. Tracy is, I think, in terms of Sopranos lore, one of the all-time great one-episode arc characters.
Yeah.
The sad thing is you never really remember her name, you know, the name of the character. You just remember the episode with the stripper. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I mean, and it has such a vast effect on kind of the arc of the next two seasons, this season and season four, that like it just kind of keeps coming back to that, even though she only was on screen for, you know, probably 15 minutes total. And yeah, it's just like, and also like one of the most beautiful bodies. Just like this episode just brings it back to what the show is really about, which is titties and meat. Mm-hmm. And just in terms of like titty meat, perfect. Just
could have been more cured meats this episode. That was the only drawback, really.
Yeah, but in terms of meat, I'm talking about like titty meat, and also Noah's dick, probably.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, can we real quick just talk about the opening of this episode?
Please.
I thought this is one of my favorite all-time openings of any episode, where it starts with a song by the Kinks
the least likely like stripper song.
Yeah,
that's like the first thing that I thought of is like, what stripper is dancing to this? I mean, I get it, the song's Living on a Thin Line, so you know.
Yeah.
That sets the motif for the episode, but
it's such a good. It reminds me of the funeral scene in The Wire, where like I don't necessarily believe that a bunch of Baltimore cops are listening to the Pogues,
right?
But I want to believe it because it's such a good song.
Yeah, yeah, and it's the same with this one. Although I have to say, this is maybe one of the most painfully British songs I've ever heard. Yeah. Like this shit is so British that even the Kinks, who don't normally sound that British when they're singing, went extra British for this song. So it's kind of got a weird feel to it. I have a clip of the song. It's called "Truly the Best Soprano Song."
The Queen's Navy and the ships, David Beckham fish and chips, but there's no bread pie now. There's no bread pie now. Order tea, Harry Potter crisps, football union, Jack Jimmy, sweet for the hat, yellow teeth. There's no bread pie now.
I take back every insult I ever made towards your mashups because your parody songs are so good.
I mean, I know what you're talking about. That's the song. That's exactly how it goes. You played it again.
Yeah, I gotta hear it again. I'm
the
sorry.
Queen's Navy and the ships. David Beckham fish and chips, but there's no bread pie now. There's no bread pie now. Order tea, Harry Potter crisps, football inject Jimmy Sweet for the regular teeth.
What did you say there?
I said Harry Potter crisps. What do I say? Football Union Jack, oh, okay. Chimney sweep, bowler hat, yellow teeth. I mean, I'm just saying the Kinks, you know, a little bit too British, a little bit too sure. British, you know. Uh-huh. But yeah, that is. It's definitely. It sets up, like you said, Brendan. It's the motif of the episode, living on the thin line. But
I wish you squeezed something about old timey trains in there.
Well, I thought about continuing. I was like, how many
old-timey
lyrics?
Old trains, metal in the brain.
Oh boy, Mary Poppins. Anyways,
yeah. That's good.
Yeah. So it's a great opening song. I love it a lot. And it also starts with a really funny conversation between Syl and the bartender and Tony about how Italians are like they do too many nicknames, which I don't know. Is that true? Vince, did you grow up?
No, I didn't, but have you seen Goodfellas?
That's true. They do have a lot. But is that a mafia thing or is it an Italian thing?
I think that's just a blue collar thing. Like, I think I think Boston guys all have nicknames too. Like, oh, you know, it's Tommy, Black Tommy, Squeeze Box, Feather, Spinach. You know, it's like, yeah. I think I think it's any group of guys because like sports teams or fraternities are pretty much the same.
And it's the Cholos too.
Yeah.
Yeah, they love it. They got Pepper, they got Slimer, they got Smiley. There's a lot.
Yeah.
Well,
I feel like that I'll play that clip of Georgie discussing nicknames. It's almost a little overly self-referential, I feel.
Don't seem to matter very much anymore.
Guy on 13th Street. I told him go see Gigi.
Before Benji.
GG, Beansy, us Italians, I think we're the only ones who use nicknames to that extent.
No, you're Chinese.
Nah.
It's violinist Yo-Yo Ma.
Super K. It's another word for nickname.
What's Super K? I was going to look it up, but I didn't.
It's what he says it is. It's another word for nickname.
Oh, is that it? Is that all it is?
Yeah, that's all it is.
Was it just the bartender wanting to show off that he knew a name, that he knew of like a fancy French word?
Yeah, it's like
for
a
nickname?
Big word, yeah. Sobriquet.
We kind of see the evolution of Georgie in this episode because he was like, we previously saw him. He's like a little bit sensitive. He doesn't know how to work the phone. And now he's
a punching bag.
Yeah, he's a punching bag, but he's like a curiously sensitive bouncer guy. But then again, much like Noah, he also turns out to be like a fuckboy in this of his own special flavor.
That's right. That's right. He, you know, he ends up, you see him for the first time as being someone who's willing to basically force women to trade sexual favors in order to be part of the VIP section.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because I've gotten so used to his character being kind of meek and kind of like a sweet guy. Like he always says, you know, it's $50 to me plus a blowjob later. Part of me is like, I bet he doesn't collect on that blowjob. He just seems too nice. You know, he seemed like a nice guy. It's just, I don't want to believe that Georgie would do that.
I mean, I think he's just another credit to the Sopranos writers that they don't ever let anyone be the good guy.
Yeah.
Like early on, you would have thought like, oh, maybe Georgie, he's kind of like the den mother. He's protecting these girls and he's kind of sensitive and he's a little dumb. And it's kind of the same thing with Carmela. Like when I was watching this episode, I was thinking that like if this was written in 2020, they would definitely make Carmela like the voice of reason who's there to, you know, contextualize things that there to be a person who calls Tony on his shit. And she does call Tony on his shit, but like this show never lets you forget that Carmela is like just as retrograde as Tony. She's just like a little better at optics. And I think that's one of the strengths of the show.
Yeah. I mean, Carmella.
Well, I think that's a good point, Vince, because like this show wouldn't get made this way.
No.
Today, you know, because like
no.
There would have to be a scold. There would have to be someone because people can't, you know, like people are deathly afraid of even something that normal people understand is bad as like being perceived as like an endorsement of it.
Yeah.
And so like, it's like shows now have to have a character be like, okay, time out. Let me tell you why what just happened is bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's so horrible. I mean, it doesn't benefit anybody because it just assumes that your audience is so dumb that they can't
right.
understand or that they can't make any moral judgment for themselves.
Well, everybody yeah, is so afraid of, you know, things being like secretly alt-right or something that
yes,
they have
yes.
to, that they exactly what you said, they have to explain everything. And it's like this weird impulse of, it's this weird impulse of like centrist liberalism where, mm-hmm. you know, they want every work of art to be about cool, like nice people who are, you know,
what work of art has actually been secretly alt-right. I mean, it's just this, like,
yeah, I think just, yeah,
just Million Dollar Extreme, like, which I think got taken off the air before it even aired.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I do
this, like, there's this like paranoia that it's like seeping into our culture. And it's like, I don't know what like people can actually point to as like, having been secretly all right, it's like all these weird people who are, it seems like they're just like, all it is just an angle for a writing gig, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. All these shows are secretly all right. They need to hire me. So
yeah.
They,
yeah.
I can ensure that it's not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, that's about right.
Unemployed liberal arts majors.
Yeah. Yes. And I do think it is kind of,
please buy my series of seminars on how to train your employees, against, unconscious bias.
Yeah, why hiring unfunny people will help you be woke. no, but I do think there's also, I mean, if we're talking about the way that we need to couch offensive behavior done by characters on TV and something that, you know, signals to the audience, oh, it's okay. There's an impulse in general now where people, I think they want to have bad people on screen or characters who are flawed, but they also at least in comedy they want to make the bad jokes, but they have to find a safe angle to do it. So it's like, I mean, did you guys watch Bill Burr on Saturday Night Live?
Yeah,
that was like a perfect example.
I was just gonna bring that up because like back in the day, I mean, nothing he said was like that was anything crazy. And like back in the day, you would take that kind of comedy for what it was, which was just, you know, one guy's, you know, flawed perspective, whatever it might be, and laugh at the wordplay that he built into that. But it's like they're looking for his set to be some sort of, you know, piece of philosophy that's going to stand the test of time. And it's like, no,
it's
comedy
like
was
a coherent worldview.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Comedy like a joke has to reflect a coherent worldview. It can't just be ladies, wash your ass.
Yeah. 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 And it's like, you know, the thing about Bill Burr is he's so good that he found the funniest angles to do the jokes that he has been doing for, you know, 30 years.
Yeah.
And found the angles so that, anyone who was going to accuse him of being, you know, offensive would immediately get counter accused by, it was basically he sent a bunch of like liberal scolds after each other so that they all fought. It's like he shook
thing that Howard Stern used to do where he would call the Chinese restaurant and order and then call the other Chinese restaurant and then have like five Chinese restaurants talking to each other.
Yeah. canceled. Hey, Vince.
Hey, Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, "Now you're the man of the house."
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s, and he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but yes. It's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is, you know, that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself, mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So yeah, in this show, I feel like the closest they get to kind of like the character who's informing the audience that we know these are bad people is Meadow, and Meadow is just, you know, she's written as kind of a liberal scold,
right? I mean, in this show, they make all the liberal scolds just as bad as the people they're scolding, which is very right. True to life.
Well, not as bad. They're usually not murdering anybody.
Not as bad, but like, you know, that they have their own problems.
They show them as also flawed and yes. Also as like a lot of times disingenuous and whatnot. But yeah, let's get into...
There's a good illustration of this in a much later season when she's dating, what's his name, Flynn?
Oh, Finn? Yeah, Finn. Finn.
Finn. And... he doesn't have a job, and Tony tries to get him like a no-show construction job.
Yeah.
And he expresses concern that he is taking a job away from a Latino person. That's like, that's a really good illustration of that.
So perfect. Because it's like, it's just an entire group of people, the mafia sitting around, literally taking jobs away from other people and not even showing up and going, yeah, that's the fucking point.
Yeah.
We're here to take the jobs.
Was Finn the one that ended up in like a gay relationship with Vito, or is that a different?
No, he doesn't end up in a gay relationship with Vito. No, he ends up running away.
Oh no, he saw Vito getting a blowjob, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and Vito creeps on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He buys some tickets to the Mets.
Yeah. Yeah, he tells him his piss stream sounds like a racehorse.
All right. Okay. So, let's continue just real quick with the with Meadow and Noah. So, Meadow and Noah have sex for the first time in this episode, which is also kind of weird to watch.
Yeah, kind of gross.
Just because it's again, they wrote it pretty well
and shot it well. They shot it like an actual like weird college sexual nervous experience.
Yeah And I always appreciate it when they're, you know, when someone shoots like a teenage sex scene to not make me horny. I'm mm-hmm. always like, thank you, because usually so Caitlin meanwhile is going fucking crazy, and I have a theory about this episode, because the arc of what ends up happening is basically Noah and Meadow get together, they finally have sex, and then Caitlin is being weird, and then Noah, you know, suggests being nice to her, and then they're nice to her and she's still weird, and then you know, eventually
Noah has a personal experience with her. He suggests like, oh, let's be nice to her. And then once he actually has to like spend more than 10 minutes with her on his own, he's like, oh yeah, no, we need to build the wall and she should be in prison.
Right. So he basically ends up, you know, getting a C minus on a test because she came over and I guess distracted him. Right. And then, he takes his grades very seriously. His father files a restraining order. And then he breaks up with Meadow. Here's my theory. Did Noah fuck Caitlin?
That was an interesting ambiguity.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I
like that they built that amount of, they really put you in Meadow's position, because we actually don't know why the hell Noah decided to break up with Meadow. I simply read that as like Noah got a visit from his dad and his other bougie friend, and he realized that like Meadow was beneath him somehow.
That's interesting.
He was embarrassed that he had to bring his dad to meet his girlfriend, and then she had to admit that her father's like in waste management.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that too, but I also, I mean, if we're going just on the surface, there's clearly things start changing after they have sex, after Meadow and Noah have sex. Like they're still cute,
yeah.
And you know they fuck a couple of times. But you know, he definitely starts to change, which
right.
kind of like,
there's another simpler way to read that, which is that, you know, when you're in your, especially early and mid 20s, you know, like you build your horniness into, you know, this greater affection for a person than really mm-hmm. exists. And then you start having regular sex and it's sort of like the blinders come off and you realize like you actually have to hang out with that person when you aren't blinded by your lust for them. And I feel that changes the tenor of a relationship inherently. And in fact, I think that's why people should have sex as soon as possible when they're dating, like the thing where you're supposed to make a guy like wait, you know, four dates or whatever. Like, no, you should have sex with them as early as possible so you can find out like what your relationship actually is to each other.
No, yeah, that, to me, that is like, you know, that's the first thing you should do before even talking. Just fuck.
Yeah.
The first thing you should say to each other is, oh, you want to like that, you dirty fuck. You like when I fuck inside of you, you know, whatever, you know, like hot stuff. Like, it feels good to do good. You know?
Yep.
It feel good,
hot,
do good.
Hot stuff like that.
Hot stuff like that. But yeah, but it really does imply some tomfoolery was going on between Noah and Caitlin. I have a clip of just kind of the progression of their this kind of threesome, this relationship.
Uh-huh. Caitlin does kind of act like someone who, you know, got piped down.
Oh yeah,
after,
right?
After
yeah, that's
that
what
scene,
I'm saying.
Right?
That's what I'm saying.
No, there's this thing on TV once about that pilot Charles Lindbergh and about how his baby was kidnapped and killed.
Jesus Christ already!
Don't go.
We're going to Noah's.
You know, at least you have a boyfriend.
Maybe you should find her a guy.
I have an idea. I think her birthday's coming up. Why don't we take her out, you know, like to celebrate? Get her drunk. Maybe it'll cheer her up. And I know it would cheer you up.
Oh, yeah? What? Want to hang out?
I'm writing my paper.
You mind if I just sit and study then? I'm fine, really. It's just, you know, it's creepy up there alone.
All right.
I just feel better already. Irene is an amazing cook. Now, if I just don't get freaked out by the sound of the pine trees at night, I'm going to Noah's.
So, to me, everything that happens in that relationship is like, it implies that they fucked, because it starts out with, you know, first she's like jealous, like, at least you have a boyfriend, you know, and then he says, oh, maybe we should, you know, be nice to her. Maybe we could all go out. You know, she could get drunk, and then, you know, that would make her feel better. And then he says immediately, I know what will make you feel better. So his feel better is fucking. That's what his feel better is. I'm pretty convinced that he wanted to get everyone drunk and have a threesome. That's my guess. That's my guess. Sure. And then Caitlin, she goes over knowing full well that this is a guy who fucks, because she knows, you know, when like you find out that someone's fucking when you're not fucking. Like this is me in like middle school when I found out that a girl was like, you know, giving her boyfriend a blowjob, and all of a sudden you're just horny for that girl because you're like, that's a girl who gives blowjobs, even though it's like, no, she's in a relationship with somebody. I mean, and they do sex.
This is an intriguing theory. I think you seem a little bit like Charlie Day with the note cards on the wall, like making
No. I put it all together, Vince. Yeah, I put it all together. It's just feels right to me, because then she comes over.
She's definitely got a pep in her step after, right? That scene.
Well, she's and also then, right? bipolar. But yeah, like you could make a case for your theory, but you could also make a case for, you know, she's just bipolar, and she like has wild mood swings, which has been her character since she was first introduced.
Okay, but there's also pep in Meadow's step the moment after she and Noah fuck for the first time.
Sure.
All of a sudden, like the show is almost like making a point to be like, you know, when you
he's got
when
a
you,
magic dick.
Yeah, he's got a magic dick. He makes everyone feel better. And then when they break up, of course, she has the opposite. She doesn't have a pep in her step anymore. She's like, oh, is there any food in this house? It's like, it makes a point to be like, you know, this sure. is the effect that Noah,
I
the fuck boy.
I didn't go there because I have such a hard time imagining Noah, you know, being a good. Being
yeah,
a good
but that's
lover.
The trick. That's the fuckboy trick. The trick is like, oh, I'm just a nice guy, and then it's
make
like,
it yeah, I like to yeah, take that pussy like and put that weak. Pussy in my pocket, and then take the pussy with.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah,
that's how it is.
All right.
Behind the scenes. Anyways, and then of course, Meadow and Noah break up, and. I gotta say, like, Noah's breakup skills were just so terrible. Like, there's a thousand ways he could have broken up with her. In the library is a weird place to do it. And the weirdest part is when he's done, he puts his glasses back on and continues studying like a fucking sociopath.
Yeah, like, well, Noah's a piece of shit. They established that from day one.
I'm just saying, you know, it's kind of strange to me that he would do that. Like, my instinct when I break up with someone is to go, you know?
Yeah.
But he was going to continue studying there.
He was going to make her go. Yeah.
Jesus. Fuck boys.
Yeah. Cause why should he go? Because she's the one who's negative.
Yeah. That's a very yeah. good point. She's the one who's incredibly negative.
That's another fucking limousine lib thing where everything comes down to like how positive an attitude you are. And it's like, ah, I just can't handle this negative energy. Like, he would have been great working at fucking Theranos with Elizabeth Holmes.
Yeah.
Don't tell me what's not possible. Tell me what is possible.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting because Noah, you know, while Caitlin and Tracy's characters are kind of paralleling each other, Noah and Ralphie are kind of also doing the same thing. And not in the exact same way, obviously. I think Ralphie's storyline, this is the episode where Ralphie really comes out like as a full piece of shit.
Yeah.
You know,
I would
like,
say,
as
like
I
this,
said,
this,
Ralphie gets mouthy and his character goes down southy. I think that was a perfect way.
Yeah. The way I would describe his entire arc is it's sort of like the I'm all right spider scene, like blown up into a standalone storyline where he does like this monstrous thing to a person he knows has no power and can't hurt him, and then when people call him on it, he's just like, oh, what, oh what, like I never dug a hole before.
Yeah it is it's weird though, because you see traces of Ralphie's kind of character, you know, like for the first five episodes, you see traces. You see a little bit of Gladiator, a little bit of like, you know, habitual line stepping with the jokes, a little bit of like violence. But there's also this side to his character that's supposed to be like, you know, empathetic. Like early on, he's like an empathetic. He's introduced by saying, "We lost my mother last year," and like kissing Tony and stuff. But now he's just, he's gone like full heel turn. And
Ralphie's first appearance at the funeral for Livia.
Yeah. That's okay. His first appearance. And it is just kind of like, it's jarring because now it's like, okay, this is the Ralphie that I've always hated. But watching the previous five episodes, I'm like, I kind of like Ralphie, you know? But now,
yeah,
he's
I would say in this episode, on the rewatch, I sort of liked him too. And my memory of him was, oh God, like just a really grating character.
Yeah.
Because he is, but I think maybe at the time I was reading him as literally grating, whereas this time I could like appreciate how well written of a grading character he is.
Yeah.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah, I think totally. The first time you see him, like you sense that like line stepping and it might feel like accidental or you're not sure where the writers are going with it. And then on rewatch, you're like, oh yeah, that's obviously like the type of person that he is that he's always pushing you like a little beyond your boundaries and making you like a little bit uncomfortable and you push back against it. But that's clearly like a manipulation strategy on his part.
Right.
He does it in such small increments. Then he's like, oh, what are you talking about? This is just like a little thing that I do.
You know, it just shows that like, you know, jokes can go too far and jokes can hurt.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Jokes. Words jokes are also violent.
Are like
also
fists.
There's a great scene of Ralphie telling the joke. Continuing a great Sopranos tradition of a scene starting on the second half of a joke.
Yes. Yes.
What was
it's a recurring?
Oh, the joke is like, oh, holy cow! Look at all these fucking Indians.
Holy cow, look at all these fucking.
Yeah, look at all these fucking Indians. Yeah. This episode does a lot of like a lot of the scenes start in the middle of the scene, and it's some of the best beginnings of scenes ever. I think Vince, our favorite scene, I think, is the exact same thing. It's the brunch scene.
It's one. It's one of my two favorite lines in this for sure.
So Russell Crowe, I mean, he's trapped, right? They're gonna sever off his head. And he's telling him how to do it?
I know. And then he yanks a sword from that dude. Yeah. That was so fat. What about when the guy gets hit with that spike thing and chunks of his head go flying?
Not enough already.
Well, we're making conversation.
I know, but people are trying to eat.
Thank you.
Why do you let him watch this garbage? Aaron Brockovich, that was a nice one.
I didn't care for it.
You did too. What are you talking?
I love the correction of his own opinion like that. That is something.
Yeah.
I've had that happen multiple times to me, mostly because I forget my opinions about things often.
Just writing his love of Gladiator is like such a big part of his character. It's incredible. It's so good. And then it follows up later in the episode when he's watching Spartacus and getting all mad.
Yeah, that was great. It's got a flat top in ancient Rome.
and he does the thing that they do a lot in The Sopranos, where they show that a character really loves like some piece of art, whether it's a movie or a song or whatnot, but then they completely misquote it. He opens one of the scenes where he goes into the VIP room and he starts screaming, "I have come to reclaim Rome for my people."
Hey, Ralph.
I have come to reclaim Rome for my people.
How you doing?
I have come to reclaim Rome for my people!
I don't get it. What do you mean?
Fucking Gladiator, you fuck.
Or the movie. I didn't see it.
You're an asshole.
First of all, that's not a line from the movie. That no. line is not in the... I searched everywhere. I was like, okay, I want to try and find that line with Russell Crowe saying it. I ended up in a bunch of like Sopranos subreddits where there's multiple posts with people being like, yeah, that's not actually a line from the movie, and people trying to guess where he got this line from.
I mean, it's kind of like the subtext of the movie is that he's going to take the throne and make Rome into a republic again. Isn't it? Isn't that like the one of his like ultimate goals?
Sure. But that's still not,
oh no, you know what it was? It was, what's his name? Joaquin Phoenix's dad was going to turn it back into a republic, and that's right. why he killed him.
That's why he chokes him out.
Yeah.
But even if it was like, oh, it was a subtext line, he can't be mad at Georgie for not understanding this line that he's inventing completely. They'd be like,
yeah, but
mad
you knew it
at
was
someone.
Gladiator.
What?
You knew it was Gladiator though.
I knew it was Gladiator because of all the context clues sure. of him talking about Gladiator for sure. fucking five episodes in a row. But like the fact that he is fucking, you know, just saying, you know, oh, it's like if my dad, because my dad famously quotes movies and then waits a beat and tells you where the movie's from. He goes, you ever flashy thing me? Men in Black. And then he gets mad at people for not having seen Men in Black or not knowing that exact line. But it would be like if my dad was like, this machine will make you forget, but then you will become the guy in the suit. And then just be like, Men in Black. It's just not, it's like you can't explain us the subtext of a movie. I don't know the subtext of Men in Black, so I can't really think of a great example. But it does go on, this love for Gladiator, where I think Ralphie does, I think he does the best impression of Russell Crowe that I've ever seen. Do you guys agree that it was a good impression?
I liked where he completely unnecessarily put a cigar out on Georgie for no reason at all.
I did like that too. That was good. But I mean, impression wise, I think it's one of the best. In fact, I have a clip of that.
Oh.
Hey, Ralph.
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius.
Come on, man.
Commander of the armies of the North.
All right, come on.
Loyal servant to the true emperor, Marcus Aurelius.
Put it down, Ralphie, come on.
Father to a murdered son.
Come on, Ralph.
Husband to a murdered wife.
Come on.
And I will have my vengeance. In this life or the next.
My fucking eye, I'm blind.
Pitch perfect impression. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Great. Joey Pants, you know, really doesn't get enough credit for his range.
He really doesn't. He's very, very good.
Didn't Gladiator win Best Picture?
Yeah.
It did. It is kind of weird. That is
really weird.
Looking back at that as a choice for a Best Picture, kind
like,
of strange.
I knew that, but I didn't even trust myself to know that. I thought surely that memory must be implanted like some satanic panic repressed, you know.
Yeah.
No, it won Best Picture.
Yeah, it's just one of those years where I think people were like, yeah, it's Oscar bait. And yeah, it's like they finally made a movie so glossy that they had to give it a trophy.
Well,
I think it's so smooth.
Do you want to know the other nominees that year?
Yeah, I do.
It was Aaron Brockovich, as we've covered.
Mm-hmm.
Chocolat.
Oh,
Traffic.
Ah,
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and Gladiator.
Yeah, weird. I mean, I think Crouching Tiger is a better movie. But. Chocolat is awful. It's maybe one of the worst movies I've ever seen, but you know, I think back in the day that was considered a good movie. Anyways.
I get that one and Amelie mixed up. They're kind of like the same movie in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
Amelie
so,
is delightful.
Amelie is great. That's just a good movie.
I prefer Like Water for Chocolat.
Very good. Very, very good. So Tony doesn't really do much in this episode. You notice? This is not really much of this is not a Tony heavy episode.
No.
It's Meadow heavy. I mean, it's like Meadow first and foremost.
Yeah.
And it's so funny how I mean, she and Tony like don't interact for huge chunks of the show.
He does get like an unnecessarily vigorous blowjob while Ralphie is swinging the lock mm-hmm. around. Did you notice how much she was moving in that? I felt like she thought she had to really sell the idea that she was given a blowjob, but like no one moves their back that much when they're given a blowjob.
Yeah, it definitely was. It looked like a stage blowjob.
Mm-hmm.
But also, there's something I really enjoy about Tony being in his head when he's trying to come. I think we've all been there where there's just like watching him just being like trying to concentrate on ejaculating.
Yeah, even he knows he's just got to go make Ralphie stop doing whatever the fuck he's doing. Because
he doesn't know.
But he knows like by the sounds of what's going on, like, ah, Christ, I got to go tell Ralphie to stop doing this.
Yeah, and it's you know, you feel for him because he's just like all he wants, he is a simple man, all he wants is to get his dick sucked and just enjoy his night, you know, and he's got to go play baby boss, you know, it sucks. But he does have a scene. You know, he doesn't do much gangstering, I think, in this episode, but he does have a scene where he orders a hit on a baby.
Oh, wow, I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. I have a clip of that.
I don't know what to do. He acts like he doesn't give a shit.
Do you ever think he's not acting?
You think he'll help me support it?
Oh, sure. It'll be father knows best over there. Well, do you want my advice? You already got one kid. Problems with that, burning him with cigarettes, whatever the fuck you were doing.
I got help for that. I had a lot of repressed anger. The county social worker says it all goes back to my mom and holding my hand on the stove.
Whatever, okay? Your age, your situation, you need another kid like you need a fucking hole in the head.
So you think I should get an abortion?
Believe me, when Ralphie's the father, you'll be doing this kid the next few generations a favor.
As a Catholic, that, I imagine that took a lot for him to be like, you got to kill that baby. You know what I mean?
I think it goes back to the last episode of Tony Soprano, unlikely relationship expert. And, you know, the last few episodes, he really gives out some good relationship advice.
Yeah. Getting an abortion, I think that would have been some good advice had she heeded it. I think she probably should have listened. I think another name for this episode would just be Daddy Issues. I think the real gangsta of this episode is Daddy Issues.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, you know, and the patriarchy, but that's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just a fancy way.
Well, you guys, you know, a lot of people don't understand this about the show, but, you know, a lot of people say, hey, great mob show and everything, but really, it's about family.
It's absolutely about family. You know, it's just straight up, it's Olive Garden.
I think it's actually about the death of the American dream and the twilight mm-hmm. of the American frontier.
I think it's about mental health and just like taking a mental health day when you're feeling blue. And I think it's a giant ad for the anti-depression drug companies. That's what I think. And it's about titties and meat.
Yeah. I liked that they basically did Louis C.K.'s bit about like homeless people as a storyline. Yeah. Like his old bit about like, you know, how you scold people for like caring about homeless people. But like, you know, there is a level.
Doesn't that man need help? Desperately. Come on, let's go.
Yeah.
But I mean, to go back to what I was saying earlier, think about all the HBO comedies that have like come and gone. Like, did you ever laugh at, I mean, I never watched Entourage, but like take fucking Entourage or something like,
right.
You ever laugh as hard at
never
Matt or Ballers as you did when it's revealed that the woman has a New York Daily News thong.
Yeah. Well, here's like, the thing.
It's incredible.
Here's the thing. I went on Nando Vila's Entourage podcast a few weeks back. I don't think it's aired yet. But one thing, like if you rewatch Entourage, the thing that immediately jumps out at you is how bad all of the acting is. And so it's very much like the reverse of The Sopranos. like going back to Entourage, you remember that back in the day, like TV could have people on it that were really bad actors. And I think now it just doesn't. Like all of the acting is so much better on TV. And I think one of the reasons is like Sopranos really just kind of like, if nothing else, it really like elevated the acting game of television because everyone on it was so good, even down to the people that are doing one-off character arcs.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the acting on Entourage is absolutely horrible, and the worst part is that you know, they're supposed to, you know, Vince plays an actor,
and
you know, that's a bummer. And then also a lot of the actors, there's actors who are playing themselves, and you know, to me though, you don't watch Entourage for like the acting chops, and because it's not a drama. Or it's not sold as a drama, it inherently makes things less funny because you're waiting for jokes. Like you're there for, you're there for jokes. It's very, you know, it's a sitcom, right?
Yeah.
Whereas like The Sopranos tricks you into thinking that it's this, you know, serious, long form mob movie. And it's not at all. It's just not that, it has its moments where it is, but for the most part it is, just a really, really dark comedy.
Well, I mean, I would argue Goodfellas is basically a comedy too.
Oh, sure, sure, yeah, you can make that argument. But yeah, I just it's hard to compare, you know, Sopranos to any of the like HBO like comedy series, because HBO comedy series are billed as comedy series, you know. So it's like it's a different thing.
I think, well, most...
Well, I get what you're saying, but my point is more like, was there... I've certainly never laughed that hard at a joke.
Oh, no, completely. No. Completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
As I did when the woman had the newspaper up there.
I think all of HBO's overt comedies are half-hour shows, and the fact that Sopranos is, like, technically... It's more like a 45-minute show, which is... Honestly, I think all hour shows should be more like 45 minutes. But I think because it's... you know, it's supposedly an hour long show that we assume it's meant as a drama.
Yeah. So speaking of funny, this is the last clip that I have. And it is Ralphie and Tracy's final scene together, in which, Ralphie, you know, he does a lot of joking around, but, he goes, I think, further than, any other time with what he is about to do with Tracy. And I have a clip.
How else am I going to take care of you when you're 9 months pregnant?
You serious?
Of course I'm serious. We'll get a little house. Colts. I know that guy who's a mortgage broker.
Really? Ralphie, I love you.
I love you too, baby. It's a boy. We'll name him after me. It's a girl. We'll name it Tracy after you. This way she can grow up to be a cocksucking slob just like her mother. Are you out of your fucking mind?
Get him, motherfucking piece of shit!
That's right. That's right. Get it all out. Get it all out, you little whore.
I gotta say, that is the second coldest breakup in this episode.
Yeah.
Like next to Noah just being like, I really didn't want to talk about all this right now. and then continuing to study.
Poor fucking Tracy, man.
Yeah. I know.
She gets shit on.
She deserved
the
better.
The entire episode.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's just so sad to watch too, because you're just like, you feel so bad for her, because it is clear that she is mired in this life in a way where like she even owes Syl money. You know, like he's like, I'm squeezing her. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're hoping for a way out, and then she finally stands up for herself and gets murdered by Ralphie.
And but Tony, not before, Tony's yeah. thing where he doesn't even like want to make small talk with her. He's like, why are you talking to me? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an interesting thing too, because like,
couldn't you say thanks that she made you some fucking date bread, bro?
Yeah, I mean, but she was definitely the, you know, I like that he laid down the like employer-employee sure. relationship boundary. Yeah. Like that's actually kind of adult of him. Like,
yeah.
You expect him to be like, hey, gorgeous, what's what does that butthole smell like? You know, something hot like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's and, what I say.
And instead, he, you know, he's laying down boundaries. But of course, it's all to her detriment, because had he been, I think, a better employer, he would have been like, run, get the fuck out. Yeah, so that Tracy meets her and Ralphie cements himself as a true piece of shit. And it just gets me excited to see what's going to happen with Ralphie. You know, what's next for him?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
I wonder if he,
someone
if
said he's
going to
end
ways.
Up in a car trunk somewhere. So,
I mean, someone said that. Is that what's going to happen?
I
Who
don't
knows?
Know.
I mean, I guess we'll just have to find out.
I legitimately don't remember, so I'm excited to find out.
Yeah, me too. Well, just a final thought. I have no least favorite scene in this episode.
Yeah, me neither. Nothing came to mind.
Nothing came to mind. Maybe like I wanted to say the Melfi scene where he's like explaining, you know, what happened, but that it was actually, I thought that was really good. Where
Brendan,
he,
yeah, that's a decent Melfi scene.
Yeah. Did you have a least favorite?
Oh man. I would say favorite scene, definitely the homeless woman scene. I mean,
yeah,
I had no recollection of that. And so when I saw it, I was just, that really got me. The way it was shot, the reactions, everything. I mean, it was perfect.
It's a great reveal.
So good.
Did I mention my other favorite line with Caitlin?
Oh no, you didn't. What was your other one?
It was when she tearfully says, "I think I miss my ferrets."
Yeah.
Pretty solid.
Yeah.
Good.
Pretty
luck.
Great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not sure if I had a least favorite one. They were all really good. I mean, if anything, it was just, I really felt for Tracy.
Yeah.
She just really got dogged the whole episode and then gets murdered. So it was maybe, I wouldn't say least favorite, but those were heavy, man. Like,
heavy
watching her get shit on the entire time.
I think they really drove home, like, hey, you're not supposed to feel good watching this show, so don't. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Right.
And
yeah,
I love that.
Good point.
Yeah.
I mean, she just gets so used up. I mean, I think it's worth mentioning real quick. I mean, even that one scene where Ralphie takes her in the back room, he ends up making her give the security guy a blowjob too.
Yeah.
Remember, there's like a
like a cop,
guy, like a rent-a-cop.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, like, who is that guy? And like, you can tell like Ralphie must just be like, yeah, it's funny if I bring this guy, you know,
yeah.
like just to fuck with her.
Yeah. He's definitely, you know, pushing those boundaries as far as he can, as he can, you know, he's being as much of a piece of shit to her, as he possibly can be. And it just makes you, hate Ralphie to a point where you're like, where you just kind of, you wait for him to get murdered at some point.
I like,
you
know,
waiting to see him end up in the trunk of a car.
You're sure. Waiting for it.
I liked the total one-off fat joke where Polly just sees Vito and, and Bobby Bacala, and he's like, hey, it's like an ad for a weight loss clinic.
Yeah,
before and way before.
Yeah.
and then he says, hey Tony, do you hear what I said? And then, you know, then Tony goes, yeah, before and after.
Yeah,
he totally misses
because he's like, I'm not,
Oh, it's great.
That's good. And I forgot. Good Lord, those guys are huge.
Yeah. I know. You don't get a lot of profile shots of those guys, I think, most of the time. So seeing them profile belly to belly, titty to titty, you're just like, fucking god damn.
Can you imagine if you were a morbidly obese Italian actor and you didn't get cast on The Sopranos when it was on? Like, that was like the fucking gravy train of all gravy trains for fat Italian guys.
And you know how much fat Italian guys love gravy. I'm sorry.
I mean, those guys are not getting work on Dawson's Creek.
They certainly aren't. Although it would be really funny if like Pacey fucked one. Just randomly Pacey just brings a fat Italian Guido. It's just like, this is Gigi. Hey yo, Dawson.
Is this the creek
doing?
This is, you call this a creek?
You could put a body in one of these creeks. You ever think about that?
Hey, there's
I don't want to wait.
This is
myself a gun.
This is a nice creek you got here. Be ashamed if someone dammed it up.
That's great. Anyways, I think all in all, solid B+. Great episode.
Yep.
Solid. Brendan, thank you so much for coming on our Side Quest podcast, dude.
Yeah.
I fucking love you. Where can people find you?
Nowhere.
That's sick.
In my daughter's room in the canopy bed with the unicorn, rainbow unicorn pictures on the wall.
please don't find me.
Please.
Yeah, don't find me.
Please don't look for me. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Frogcast@gmail.com for all of your pod yourself a gun questions, comments, concerns. If you have any corrections,
you couldn't even come up with your own Gmail.
No, I mean, I just like, we have one, but I was just like, ah, fuck it. This way we get people to be like, what's a Frogcast? And then they'll,
okay.
Yeah. I don't know.
Cross promotion.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll call it cross promotion. You know, yeah, send us any corrections. Oh, one fun correction, just real quick, was remember the wheelchair lady at Livia's funeral, Fanny? Yeah. She's in a wheelchair because she's the one who Livia hit with her car.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that was a correction. Someone let us know that. Patreon.com/Frogcast. That's our other podcast, bonus episodes. You can listen to those. Please subscribe. And make sure to give this 5 stars and a review on iTunes. Vince, what's the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing. That's how we say don't stop believing for this one. Because.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.